asked Roger to come and read the 12 traditions. Where's Roger at? Roger. I'm Roger.
Roger.
12 traditions Al-Anon. The traditions that follow bind us together in unity. They guide the groups in their relations with other groups, with AA and the outside world. They recommend group attitudes toward leadership, membership, money, property, public relations, and anonymity. The traditions evolve from the experience of AA groups in trying to solve their problems of living and working together. Al-Anon adopted these group guidelines and over the years has found them sound and wise. Although they are only suggestions, Al-Anon's unity and perhaps even its survival are dependent on adherence to these principles. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted service, they do not govern. Number three, the relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group, they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. Number four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. Number five, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. Number six, our family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. Number seven, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number eight, Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number nine, our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, the Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and TV. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. And number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
Okay. All right. Well, it's now time we've been waiting for. We have two wonderful speakers who have come to speak to us tonight. Their names are Jack and Donna Jay, and we will now turn the time over to you folks. Thank you.
I get to go. Hi, my name's Jack. I get to go first so she could tell you all the lies that I said afterwards. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I've been in program for 31 years now. And like so many others, mine has been a kind of a roundabout journey. I started out in Al-Anon, then I went to Adult Children of Alcoholics, and then I ended back up in Al-Anon again. I was the second child of four boys in an alcoholic household. My mom was a primary alcoholic. My dad became one when I was about 14, so he never was able to beat her, so he joined her. And the message that I got growing up is that the purpose I had for being on this earth was to take care of my mother. And to look back on that, she's probably one of the strongest, wow, Godzilla-type people I've ever met in my life. I mean, she was not a subtle person. She was not only the member of a gang, she was a leader of a gang. She had HP tattoos on her hand and then little dots. Now, she didn't have that done. She did it herself. She came from Huntington Park in a very rough neighborhood. She came from a really rough background. She got married when she was 16. She had her first child 5 days before she turned 17, and she had me by the time she was 18. My dad was 8 years older. She was Scotch-Irish. He was Mexican. And in that day and age, that was very racial. It was not very well accepted at the time. And how did they get along? If you've ever seen the movie or read the book, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? That's how they interacted on a daily basis. A loving greeting is how the F were you when they came in the door. What the F have you been up to all day long? You know, just not a real healthy environment to be raised in. The other message that I received very strongly was, since I had to take care of my mom and the house was really divided, it was me and my mom against everybody. And my dad came from a family of 10 children. So he came from a very large family. But they became the enemy because my mom didn't get along with them. And again, the message, I had to take care of her. The other message she always gave me was, all men are a-holes. Period. And if nothing else, we are the baggage that we get as we grow up and what we accumulate. And when I was, okay, I took care of my mother, ended up going into the military, got married, and you could guess what my first wife was just like. She was my mother all over again. The only thing she wasn't is she wasn't promiscuous and she wasn't an alcoholic. But she was a borderline personality, unbeknownst to me. But all I knew is that she needed me, that she was more screwed up than I was, and that she would never end up leaving me. And you know, that's a true statement. That ended up being very true. We've been divorced for many years, and she still tells my two daughters, one day your father will return to me. She just doesn't realize that's when hell freezes over four times. Before then, I don't think so. So I go into program, and I come in with all my baggage. I was in program about 2 years, and I went to meetings, and this lady was sharing. She said, my husband's a cop. He beats me up on a regular basis. I'm going to leave him, so I'm spending all night out in all-night restaurants so he can't catch me. I went up and talked to her after the meeting, and I said, what are you talking about? She says, I've never been so happy. And I said, could you explain that a little bit? She said, I am finally regaining who I am, and I am not being forced into an abusive relationship. I'm leaving. And I still know the lady to this day. I could not get that out of my mind. I could not, it just couldn't set well with me, and I couldn't get rid of thinking about it. And a dynamic had developed in my marriage that was just exactly like my parents. My father would not fight with my mother because she was such a dominant person. But what he did is he would start picking on me. My mother would then come in to save me, and then the battle was on. And that remained until I left home, literally to the point that when they were going to have a fight, I would get a call and say, you need to come home because we're going to have a fight, and you have to be here. Literally. Well, in that process, and I just lost my train of thought, I'm sorry. again, I had that dynamic going in my household. My wife could not get me to fight with her because I had turned off everything. I had no feelings. The only feelings I had were anger and rage. Neither one of them are a feeling. It's what's beneath the feelings. Anyway, she started picking on my daughter. Oldest daughter, I would go in and we would start our fights. But it finally got to a point that I was in that marriage for 12 years. And I swear to God, at least every third day of that 12 years, I said, you know, if it doesn't get better in a week, I'm leaving. 12 years later, and starting to get into recovery and starting to get some feelings back and all of that, my ex-wife starts picking on my daughter. I'm shaving, and I remember it just like it happened yesterday. I finished shaving. I said, I'm a loving child of God. And God did not put me on this earth to be treated in this manner and for me to treat another human being like I treated my ex-wife. I said, it's time to go. Walked out, got my coat, said, I'm leaving. Walked out the door. That wasn't the final, but it certainly started the ball rolling. It was a very ugly divorce. And everybody hears, oh, you know, they're really bad. You know, all this bitterness. Well, when I start talking about mine, people say, say what? She did that. I literally would get my utilities turned off. And I'd call and say, you know, what's going on? Well, you turned off your utilities last week. So we had to have a magic code that she wouldn't know about, so she couldn't turn off my electrical. She was not in a position where she could really be much of a mother. She didn't have it to give, so I ended up with primary custody of my two daughters, and I raised them for 15 years by myself. Now, that was a lot of trauma, because I was getting into recovery. I was fighting an ex-wife. At one point, my daughters, who were little, changed schools 4 times and 6 babysitters in the course of 4 months, because she had caused so much trouble that I had to keep moving them around. That one almost pretty much broke me. And I remember, and I'm not a crier, I'm just not, but I start crying, and I had one daughter on one side and one daughter on the other side and saying, Dad, it's going to be okay. And they're not, but 8, 9. And somehow or another, we hung through and stayed with everything. Now, I had been divorced a couple of years. I was in ACA, and I met Donna, my current wife, my wife. And... I always think that's so weird. My ex-wife and then my current wife, you know, all that weird stuff. But when she came into the picture, she had met me through Adult Children of Alcoholics, a program we were both in at that time. And I already knew that my programming was such that I was attracted to very loud, outgoing alcoholic women. Boy, if she was brassy and you noticed her when she walked through the door, my internals went off. So I had a sponsor that was wise enough to say, you know, the next time that happens, go out the back door. Do not go forward towards that person. That is a bad mix. And I used to have a joke that my picker was broke, and it is picker, P-E-C-K-E-R. And I could pick the craziest, outlandish women to take care of, to save, always rescue. Rescue had to be a part of the picture. I met Donna, and she was very opposite of a lot of that. She was very kind, quiet. She was in recovery, nice looking lady. And I thought, gee, that she looks really nice, but would she really go out with someone like me? And I wouldn't even ask her to go out directly. I asked a friend of hers that knew her, do you think she would say yes if I asked her out? And after she said yes, then I asked her out. First date. Yeah, I think it was Valentine's Day. I went to her house, knocked on her door. Knocked on her door. Knocked on her door. No answer. I drive home. I say, what the heck? Call her up. And she says, oh, I'm here. I was upstairs. I didn't hear you knock. Okay. Likely story. Let's try this another time. About that time, my ex-wife told me that her intention was to commit suicide and kill both of our children. My sponsor at the time was a trauma psychologist, worked with a lot of suicide prevention. She said, absolutely, under no circumstances, return those children to her at this time. She's every red light there is going. She could easily do it. I had no choice. I didn't return them. I could not go to work because the law was after me. And I was on the run for 3 days. And this is about the time that I start dating Donna. And Donna goes, oh my God. What the hell have I got into? And that was a journey that when people say, program will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. I had spent thousands and thousands of dollars in court fees, law courts. And they said, technically, my daughter should not be in protective services. But they said, however, this is so bad, we will go ahead and keep them in protective services. They did something that I could never do. I could never afford to get us all psychologically evaluated. It was too much money. I couldn't come up with the money. City said, okay, we'll go ahead and do it. I mean, the LA County. We were all evaluated. That's when I found out officially that she was a borderline personality. In the course of 3 years, we went in front of a female judge, three separate times, and they said, ask my ex-wife, what do you want to do here? And pardon my language, she says, I don't give a fuck. Do whatever the hell you want to do. And she walked out the door. First time she did that, I said, done deal. And they said, no, she was upset. Okay. And I knew if I blew it, that my kids could end up in protective services or whatever. This went on for 3 years. The third time she did it, the judge said, sold. All parental rights are now removed. They don't have to talk to her. You don't have to have any contact with her. That's strictly your choice. Now, I can honestly say that I never kept my children from their mom. If they wanted to see her, I really felt that was the best thing to do. I'm not so sure looking back on it that it was, but I never prevented him. Anyway, Donna comes into the picture, and another slight revelation that I came in had in program was that I was molested as a child, and that didn't surface until I was in my late 30s. And I was working through those issues too. And that has a whole different aspect of how it affects a relationship and how you are in an intimate relationship, because hugging is not a good thing in those kind of backgrounds. You just keep your hands off me. Very distant, and I had a very strong wall up against me. And even with Donna, my space was, and it took me years to get to a point where I could let anyone that close. But beyond that, I'd do a lot of passive aggressive behavior that kept people away from me. Because I was afraid of people. Okay, Don and I dated for 7 years? Five years. Women always have the dates right. Men don't. We dated for 5 years and it wasn't working. I was too damaged. She was going through too much stuff herself. We both had two daughters. And let me tell you, my two daughters are two of the strongest women that you'd ever want to meet. and they were not about to make room for another woman with their father, period. In fact, we had to end up telling Donnie that you're going to have to grow a pair if you're going to step into this family, because it's just, you got to be strong. Anyway, we ended up breaking up, and one of my daughters was graduating from high school, and Donna was invited. And that daughter made me so mad that night that I started acting out. So I started flirting with Donna. And she's going, "What the hell's going on with you?" She calls me a couple days later and says, it's going to be a weird question. Do you think we could ever get back together?" And I said, "Yeah, we can. I don't know what's changed with you. You don't know what's changed with me. Let's get together and find out." And we did. Within a little over a year, we were married. Had a wonderful wedding. 85% of it was Al-Anon people, or people from program. And we didn't invite one single person that we didn't think had our best intentions at heart. If they didn't, they weren't invited. Now, do I get to share that was all sunshine and roses? Nah. One story that Donna doesn't tell you, I'll tell you. She moved into my house that I had. And it's kind of strange as a guy. I love to decorate. And my house is always just everything the way I want it set up. So my house is exactly like I have it. She has this whole lifetime of accumulation of stuff. And she comes to the door, and I said, "Where the hell are you putting all that crap?" Not the best response. And she felt that she didn't belong there, and I wasn't making room for her. And she said, "Give me a wall. Just give me a wall." So one day I'm in one of my really charming moods. She comes home. Every wall in that entire house was clean, bare. I said, "You wanted these walls? They're yours." All Al-Anons have the possible probability of being assholes too, and I certainly have my fair share. And she said, "Well, you're going to have to help me. I can't do this by myself." You wanted the wall. It's your wall. And the other thing that really rocked us in our marriage was anybody that's brought families together in a wedding, in a marriage, four daughters? Whoa. That is the element that came the closest to breaking us up. Because Donna's a mama bear when it comes to her kids, and I'm a papa bear multiplied by 10 when it comes to my kids. And it takes a lot of negotiating to iron all that stuff out. And my youngest daughter and Donna had some issues, and she did not want Donna to be the grandma. And my youngest daughter, she has a son and a daughter, and it was my oldest grandchild, my oldest biological, and we have an older grandson from one of her daughters. And that really, it came close. It really rocked us. But now today, Donna is the grandma that everybody in this room wished that they had had as a kid. She's so attentive, wonderful with the kids. They love her to death. My 5-year-old granddaughter can fully bake a cake. I mean, we're not just talking, just add sugar to it. She can bake the whole cake and pies. And her and Donna do that. And they, you know, you come in and the kitchen looks like 14 hurricanes hit it. She is so close to Donna. And my daughter today is so grateful that Donna is her grandmother. And she is their grandmother. And we are so blessed with the life that we have today. Donna's in program, I'm in program. Now, if you want to give God a good laugh, think a really thought that's going to get your karma to come back in your direction. When I first came into program, I hated alcoholics. I don't know why, but I hated alcoholics. I made a lot of nasty comments about alcoholics throughout the years. And I had a lot of friends that were recovering alcoholics. That didn't stop me. I still had my mouth going. It turns out that if you were to meet Don and I just casually, you would naturally assume that I'm the alcoholic and that she's the Al-Anon, because I have an alcoholic personality. And God chuckles every time I talk about that. He said, sucker, what you don't like, what you don't like in somebody else is a reflection of what you're looking at in yourself. And Donna works a damn good program. I work my program. Do we have our issues? Yeah, every couple does. But you know, we have these incredible tools that this program has given us, and the ability to communicate and say, and I call them come to Jesus meetings. And that's when you're going to sit down and have a conversation you know that the other person isn't going to particularly like, but you got to have it. You got to say, this is what's going on, and I know it's going to piss you off, but we have to put it out on the table and we have to talk about it. And we have those. What a blessing to be able to communicate with somebody that you're in that close of a relationship, the relationship that you chose to walk your walk with. Because I ask people all the time, can you tell your spouse this? Oh, no. Let me see. You're married to this person, and they're the closest person you are, but you can't tell them what you really think. I think that's incredibly sad. And we're able to do that, and the prosperity. My sponsor told me a long time ago, if we make a pact with the devil or somebody else, when we first came into recovery, we would shortchange ourselves because our self-esteem is so low, we wouldn't ask for much, we wouldn't expect much. And I have been given so much abundance in so many different areas. I live in Montclair. I have a half an acre property. I had horses when I was younger. And we just happened to be someplace one time. And Donna said, the mention of horses and then being around them, you light up. Your whole look changes. You need to get back into horses. I ended up volunteering at a rescue, ended up rescuing one of the horses that I, at the facility. Ended up buying this property. As you could look out my back door, you could see the three horses, 12 chickens, two dogs, a cat, two doves. And I had told Don at one time, I don't want any more damn pets. It's just another thing that needs attention. Now, I mean, they're all over the place. And I love it. I love that house. There's nothing better than to go out in my backyard, sit under a tree with a breeze hitting your skin, and have a horse nibbling on your back. Because we'll let him out to chew on the grass every now and then. And we're just sitting there, and the dogs are at our feet, and the cat's moving around. And Donna's friends all say, man, when I die, I want to come back to your house as a rescue animal. Because there is no better place. We have close relationships with all four of our daughters. None of them, and I, for today, none of them have a drinking problem. None of them have an addiction problem. Well, they have addiction problems, but not physical addictions. I mean, we all have something. And we're blessed. We get to see those kids all the time. All the time. One of my daughters works retail, and her husband works retail, so they work a lot of weird hours, so we have the kids a lot. And it's wonderful. And to me, there is nothing better in life than to be sitting in your home, not on red alert. When I was a kid, I was on red alert constantly. I knew where the doors were. I knew where the exits were. I knew where the tension was. So the minute it started hitting the fan, out the door. You're on your own. You're all on your own. Everybody's has to take care of yourself. not to have that, but to hear your house full of your children, your friends, and your grandchildren running around screaming and yelling and have a good time. There is not a better sound in this whole world than that. And to share it with somebody that knows what you're talking about. You're on the same page. I wasn't even on the same subject with my ex-wife, no less the same book. And this program has given me that, because the person that's standing here is incredibly different than the person that I started out. Not having any feelings and knowing nothing but rage. Not even anger, rage. And one thing I have learned, when I've got that critical eye on everybody else, I know in my heart that but for the grace of God, go I. I was working with one gentleman for a while from a very bad, bad abusive background. And he says, you know, Jack, I just read the book on Jeffrey Dahmer, serial killer. And he said, I said, yeah. He said, he was raised just like we were. And I said, and? No, he was raised like we were. I said, but we took a different road. By the grace of God, we took a different road. But only by the grace of God. And I am so blessed with the life that I have today. And something that we're going to be doing very shortly. Donna is English and Irish. I'm Scotch-Irish and Mexican. So we're going to England, Scotland, and Ireland for 3 weeks next month, which is wonderful. Only problem is I had a fear of flying for about 10 years, so I got to get over that. But we'll get there. And today I can look at that. My glass is so full instead of who's going to drink from my glass and I'm not going to have enough. I have all the abundance I could ever want. Now I'll let you clean up things.
My name is Donna, I'm an alcoholic. And I was just kind of hoping he would just go for the whole hour. I guess I'm going to give you, kind of go over how my life was. I was I had older parents. My father was 55 and my mother was 43 when they had me. And I had a 17-year-old sister and a 12-year-old brother. And like Jack, can you hear me okay? Like Jack, I really didn't know my father. My father was an alcoholic. He was never around. He was also a gambler. He was never around when I was growing up. And I was extremely close to my mother. And we had the same dynamics. My mother kind of lived through me. And she kept me from my brother and my sister, and she kept me from my father, and always told me things about them. And so what I did is I took on all my feelings towards my family. And I felt different than them. And I was molested by my brother when I was about 4 years old. And I was very close to my sister's husband. And when he took my nephews and I out to learn how to drive, I was probably about 12 years old, and my nephews were 10, and that's when he actually started coming on to me sexually. I come from a home of alcoholics. Everybody in my family were alcoholics. My mother was a periodic, and I became a periodic like my mother. My sister died about 5 years ago. She was very, very sad, very bitter woman. And I never really was really close to her because there was just a lot of jealousy for the way that we were raised. My brother is still around. I have a relationship with him. I confronted him actually right before I met Jack. I confronted him and went through an extreme depression at that time. But he apologized. I know my brother's a very sick person. And he's an old man now, and I love him. You know, I know that he's sick. But well, I'm going to go back, I guess, basically to growing up. I grew up in the home. I was a very shy little girl. I didn't want anybody to pay attention to me at all. I would never get in trouble. I followed all the rules, and I'm still a rule follower. I'm just kind of out of it. Excuse me, I had a procedure done today at Kaiser, so I'm a little bit kind of tired. I went to junior high, went to dances. No one asked me to dance. I was a wallflower, you know. And I felt very different from everybody else. When I went to high school, my girlfriend and I were both wallflowers. And we got to the first dance, and her mother dropped us off, and she shoved us out of the car. And I met my first love at the first dance in high school. And I went with this man from the time I was 15 till 18, and then I married him, and I was married to him for 12 years, until I was 30 years old. It was a crazy, crazy marriage. He was a compulsive spender. He is a compulsive liar. He volunteered to go to Vietnam. Never would admit that. Someone accused him of stealing. I thought, oh, Dennis would never do that. And you know, we were married for 12 years, and it was crazy. We had people coming because he wouldn't pay the bills. And I thought it was all him. I thought he was crazy. I was a late bloomer. I didn't really drink until I was in my 20s. And then most alcoholics start really young. But it was really a horrible marriage. When I was 28, my mother died. And when my mother died, part of me died. And that's when I started drinking. And I started drinking so I wouldn't feel the pain. But the more that I drank, the more pain I felt, you know. And I expected my husband to be there for me, and he just couldn't be there for me. And so it was really, really bad. And my mother died. We bought a house. She left me some money. And he had bought me also, he liked to buy things. He bought me this huge diamond ring, which he didn't pay for. And, you know, I get a phone call saying he owes 3 months on. I go, what is it, about 150? Go, no, it's about 450. And this is like in 1975. That's a lot of money, you know. So I gave him the ring, told him to take it back. I didn't want that ring. But he took the ring before we got married, and he hawked it because he had spent all the money that I had inherited from my mother, which, you know, wasn't really that much, but it was my mother, and it was my ring. And eventually he got the ring back. We got the house. We lived together for about a year and a half, and it was absolutely insane. He would go out for milk and come back the next morning. You know, and you would, and this was a constant thing. It went on and on and on and on. And, you know, you go from being mad to being scared to not knowing what's going on, you know. And it was like living in an alcoholic home, but it was just the fact that he was doing other things. Before Jack and I got back together again the second time, he was a LAPD. He was let go. He became a burglar. He was... on the news, and he was in the Sunday Times, and he was called the gentleman burglar. And you know, it was funny because when they said the gentleman burglar, because Jack told me that, I thought, well, that makes all the sense in the world, because for me to leave him was difficult. He didn't beat me. He wasn't openly going out on me. He was a gentleman, but he was just nuts, and I was even crazier than him, you know. And plus the fact, I had never dated, and I was drinking, and I could not wait to get out and get some other men, you know. And, you know, I was 30 years old, it was my birthday, and I sat down, and I thought, my God, in 30 years, I'm going to be 60, and I'm going to be just as miserable as I am today. Well, I got a divorce that year. And it took me 10 days, and I was out. And alcohol gave me the I lost my inhibitions. I wasn't a rule follower. You know, I was very promiscuous. It was during the 70s. I was a disco queen, you know, and my girlfriends and I did that. You know, that's what we did, you know. And I did that for probably from 30 to about 38. The last couple of years of my drinking was remorse, guilt, shame. What had I done to my daughters? I left my daughters alone. I went to my bar. I left my daughters alone. There was no cell phones at this time, you know. If it was today, I would have lost my children. There's no doubt about it. And I didn't know how to deal with my anger. I took a lot of my anger out of my daughters, and and I would cry over that. And it's taken me years to forgive myself. You know, I think that's one of the things with alcoholic women is that we don't set out to screw our daughters and sons up, but that's what we do. You know, we hurt the ones closest to us. But the last 2 years, I would spend my weekends in the house drinking. I went to Adulterers with Alcoholics. I started that when I was about, 40. I started that. Any kind of program ruins your drinking. I don't care what program it is. But, you know, I had some of my worst drinking after I was in the program. But I would go to these meetings, and they would talk about their parents, and I would go home and take the bottle to bed and drink and cry. You know, thinking about all the things I had done to my kids. I really had a horrible time getting angry at my parents, especially my mother. But anyway, I did ACA, and I met Jack. And I thought, my God, my prince is here. You know, my prince charmed me. Because I have to tell you, my choice of men were criminals. I could tell you, you know... I don't know what it was, but if there's a man, if there's a nice man and there's a criminal, that's the one I want, you know. Jack is the first man that I liked. Jack is the first man I respected. And I thought he was so damn healthy, you know. And by that time, I think I had about 3 years of program. I started a program when I was 40. I'm 66 now. So I've been in a program for a long time, but he's been a little longer. But anyway, so I met Jack, and yes, I thought he was so healthy, and then he told me about his wife, and I thought, oh God, I've heard this before. And also I was attracted to men that had kids, and he thought, I have my daughters, you know. I go, well, I dated other guys with their kids, you know. But, and I've heard this stuff about women, but I met Margaret, and first of all, I actually saw Margaret. She tried running me down. Tried running us over in his driveway, you know. So she was so I realized that he definitely was telling the truth about Margaret. But anyway, when Jack and I were together the first time, what happened is that I was able to take care of his daughters. I was able to take care of his daughters in a way that I couldn't take care of my own daughters, and that caused me a lot of grief. And I had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous the year before I met him, and no one told me you're supposed to look for similarities, and I only saw differences. So I would go occasionally to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was also a love addict, so I went to Al-Anon, and that helped me. Al-Anon helped me in very, you know, a lot of ways. It helped me with my daughters. It helped me in many, many ways, but it did not address being an alcoholic mother. And so we were together 5.5 years. We actually had broken up three years we broke up. And during the time we were together, I was dry. And a dry drunk's pretty bad. You know, I was needy. I felt guilty because I had done all this crap to my daughters. And I was still abandoning them for him and his daughters. You know, so it was a really hard thing. And after the 5 years, we broke up because we were so angry. He was so angry, I was so angry. And you know, that was the best thing that ever happened. I almost drank. I was going to Al-Anon. I was almost going to drink. I remember leaving a meeting and this gal was like shoving me out, and I went home and I went to AA the next day. That was the first time that I looked for the similarities, the first time that I reached out. I was in Whittier where there were tons of women's meetings. I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and my sobriety date is this month. My sobriety date is September 25th, 1995. And so I'm 17 years, God willing, this month. But I found a life. You know, I was able to go to school for the first time, actually, at 50. I think it was about 50 at that time. I actually took a class, got an A, signed up for another class. Took that class, signed up for another class. Never in my life was I able to ever do that. Because if I went to school, there was always some crisis, and I would just quit going, you know. But anyway, I went to school, which was so good for me. I went to lots of meetings. I had a sponsor who worked my steps. We had nights where we would have movie night. We'd all get together and do movie night. We'd go bowling. We'd take the kids, you know. And that empty hole that I had inside me was full because I had worked the steps. I didn't need a man. And you know, I tried everything. It was sex, food, cigarettes, you know, alcohol, anything to fill that hole. And this, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my God, filled my hole. And, you know, we got back together again. And what happened is that, yeah, he was flirting with me, and he didn't quite have it right. He was flirting with me, and I flirted back. But every time I saw Jack, he flirted with me. You know, and I was dating a friend. He had been dating someone too, but I flirted back with him. And Jack's not a flirter. You know, he's just, that's not the kind of person he was. And I called and I said, you know, we need to meet and talk. And finally, I thought I had nothing to lose. And I thought, what I said is, do you want to go back or not? I said, part of me would love to, but the other part says, are you crazy? You know. And he goes, yeah, I think so. And, you know, it took us a month to get back together again. And it was funny because I called him, and one daughter was having crisis, so I didn't say anything. So then about a week later, I called and talked to the other daughter, where she forgot to tell him that I called. So we had gone to, my Al-Anon sponsor and I had gone, we did like a meeting for one of her friends, and she talked about how she had manipulated this thing about getting her ex-husband back, and the day he came back, she knew it was not meant to be. And I thought, well, you know what? God's telling me this is not meant to be. And I went to the fair with this gal I was sponsoring, and I came home, and I got the message that he had called. He sounded really panicky. And, you know, I was scared to go back. You know, I was really scared because I did not want to go back to the way we were. And, you know, I'm so grateful that we did. You know, I would say, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. And everybody goes, Donna, we know what you want. But I wouldn't even allow myself to even want it. We did. We got married the following year. We had over 200 people. We didn't leave the party until everybody else was gone. We had a ball. And, yeah, it was getting married is difficult. For some reason, all my anger came out. And I was still used to chaos. It was hard. It was hard. But, and when he was talking about not wanting animals, that we only had two dogs and a cat at that time. And that's when he didn't want all the other animals when he was talking earlier. But, you know, we got married and moved into the house, and it was, stressful to say the least. You know, and then he decided he wanted to move. We had our house redecorated, and that when I came home from a meeting, when he did that with the walls, I talked to his sponsor. He goes, "Oh, Donna, just leave. We're redecorating anyway." So, I've learned. I still, for some reason, didn't feel like that was my house. It took me a while to feel that was my house, the one we're in now, but today it is. Today is our home. You know, today is our home. And I had a lot of difficulties with the girls, you know. I felt that he loved those girls more than me and that I didn't have any rights in my own home. And it was a hard thing. And I had a sponsor that co-signed my bullshit, you know. So I knew I had to find another sponsor. And the more I tried to control the relationship and try to get it really good with Kelly, the worse it got. And I worked with another sponsor, and she said, "You have to let it go. You have to treat her a certain way, and you just pray." And you know, and the thing is, when my daughter got pregnant, it was really great. And then his daughter got pregnant, and then that's when it started. And those two grandkids almost—that was kind of the breaking point for us. But something happened when I worked with a new sponsor, with my new sponsor, and. She said, "Did you have to let it give it to God?" And today I tell you that I'll tell those boys, you two made us a family. You know, you two brought us together, you know. And Evan is in Castaic and Joaquin is in Fontana, but we can't have one without the other. They look totally different, but I bought shirts one time and they go, "Do you think our parents can tell us apart?" But, you know, they're my joy. They're my joy. I love my grandkids, and I tell Jack, this. I got the best thing out of this. But I know that for me, and I know for Jack, that I have to keep working my program. You know, there was a time that I thought, you know, I'm not really an alcoholic because, you know, I was a periodic. But the reality is I wouldn't have done the things that I did, you know, and I have that alcoholic mind. And so today what I do is I have a Sunday Let Go, Let God meeting on Monday morning with my sponsor in Brea. Tuesday, I have a 11-step meeting. Wednesday, I have a women's meeting. And Jack goes, "Do you have to go to these meetings?" And I go, "Yeah, I do." You know, and I have other ones that I go to, too. You know, the longer that I'm sober, I need meetings. You know, I we're both retired now. They just actually called me back to work. I didn't think they ever would, but they called me back to work for a couple of days. But I exercise, I go to meetings, I see my kids. You know, we have a full life. We go to the movies. And I'm so grateful he started another meeting because he only used to go to one. Now he goes to two meetings, and you know, it's made the difference. I am, you know, like Jack was saying at the end, I am so grateful for any kind of a 12-step program, you know. My family doesn't have it. I have one niece in the program, and now she's dry because she doesn't want anybody to know that she's an addict. And I hear from my nephew, and his life is just tragic all the time. And I don't know why I was chosen to be blessed with this, but I just knew that I just can't be like the rest of my family. And I feel very blessed that I have this life. And, you know, we can't get our kids into program, but, you know, I think through osmosis they get a lot of it. And I will always go, and I will always learn. And I am so grateful that I had this opportunity to be here, and thank you so much.